Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer, joined as always by John Adams. And alongside us this week is Adam Sparks, new Tennessee football beat writer for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam has been handling the Vols football beat for about a month now. Adam, how's everything going on the beat so far?
It's gone good. I'm now considered a resident of Knoxville, and I can drive to practice and from practice, and that's all that counts at this point.
I know your background. John knows your background. Hopefully, some readers of the News Sentinel have learned your background, but maybe for folks who are hearing you, getting introduced to you for the first time here on the Volunteer State, what's your background?
Yeah, I grew up in Tennessee. I mean, I've only lived in Tennessee. If you know the three stars, the tri-star of the flag, I've lived in West Tennessee for about 20 years, lived in Middle Tennessee for 21 years, and now I'm in East, which means, I guess that means I'll like retire somewhere on the eastern coast. You know, I grew up with Tennessee football, just watching it from afar, living in West Tennessee. You know, I knew Tennessee football from the 90s. I'm a child of the late 80s and 90s, and they were really good then. Since I've been covering Middle Tennessee and Vanderbilt for the past 20 years as beat writer, Tennessee hasn't been as good, obviously. So maybe me coming over to the beat will change that, but we'll see.
And you left out, Adam, that you were covering mighty Vanderbilt for the Tennessean before shifting roles here. Should Vols fans be worried about the fact that you might be, you know, sharing some state secrets here with the Commodores?
When I met Josh Heupel, he asked me where I'd been before, and I told him I'd covered Vanderbilt for the previous 7 years. And his response was, "I'm glad to see that you switched sides." I didn't know I was on a side, but I suppose sometimes coaches look at it like that. You know, I will say, when I covered Middle Tennessee earlier in my career, they beat Vanderbilt every time that I covered MTSU in that game. When I switched over to the Vanderbilt beat, Vanderbilt started beating MTSU. I've now gone and covering Vandy usually beat Tennessee when I covered Vandy. So now coming over to the Vols, maybe that'll swap that series back around. I know UT's already won that game last time, but it's been a little more even the past few years than it was the previous century.
Well, the Josh Heupel era gets underway on Thursday night, September 2nd at Neyland Stadium. And overall, I think he's got a pretty good setup for week one. He gets to face Bowling Green out of the gates. Not exactly the most fearsome group of five opponent that Tennessee could possibly be facing week one. However, you could have said the same thing for Tennessee in 2019 when they opened up the season against Georgia State. I remember coming into that year, John and I were really talking a lot about the potential chance for an upset in week two for Tennessee against BYU. And we thought that's going to be one of the trickier games on Tennessee's schedule, was that week two game against BYU. And it was. BYU beat Tennessee right at the end. But of course, that was overshadowed by the fact that Tennessee had lost the week before to Georgia State. What was that, 26-point underdog, John?
I always said 25. I think you said 26.
Okay, we'll call it 25.5-point underdog, Georgia State. A result no one saw coming. So now Tennessee favored by more than 30 points against Bowling Green in Josh Heupel's debut here. Any chance that Bowling Green becomes Josh Heupel's Georgia State?
I don't think there is. But then again, if you'd have asked me before the Georgia State-Tennessee game, is there any chance Georgia State could be competitive? I would have laughed. However, that said, Georgia State was considered one of the worst teams in the Sun Belt Conference. Bowling Green is considered one of the worst teams in the country. I mean, and I know you can change from one week to the next. When you look at these scores from last year, when you lose by 38 points to Kent State, 25 to Buffalo, 42 to Ohio, 28 to Akron, I mean, you're the worst team in the MAC, which is not a Power 5 conference, as our listeners know. So what do you think, Adam? You've seen a lot of bad football. What do you think of Bowling Green's chances for this game?
Well, I like that we're replacing a guy meeting his Waterloo with a guy meeting his Georgia State. So we're changing the phrase a little bit. I don't think Josh Heupel's going to meet his Georgia State because this is a fallacy that sometimes we get into where we see all mid-majors or G5 teams, group of five teams, the same way. Georgia State is not Bowling Green. Georgia State was a middle-of-the-road Sun Belt team for whatever that means that year that they beat Tennessee. But they had an identity. If you remember back, they had a really good dual-threat quarterback. They had a running back that rushed for almost 1,500 yards that year. They had something that they were good at. I don't know that Bowling Green has anything that we can say they're good at. And to have an upset, you've got to be good at least one thing. Bowling Green doesn't have that, I think, coming into the year in the same way that Georgia State did. Maybe I guess the only way, if I want to play devil's advocate, that this could play out is in the two scrimmages, Josh Heupel said that his offense, his up-tempo offense, had been slow starting, three and outs early in the scrimmages. If you have that and then you have Bowling Green, which is a two tight end team, run the ball well early on, then maybe you get a little bit of anxiety of an up-tempo offense that's having three and outs, giving the ball back to Bowling Green, which is then eating clock and running the ball. That's the only way that I could see any kind of upset coming. But I'll go on the record saying, I think regardless of how Tennessee starts in this game, I think this is a 4 or 5 touchdown win.
Josh Heupel's offenses really have a tendency to run up the score against these lackluster group of five opponents. Of course, you know, I first covered Josh Heupel when he was offensive coordinator at Missouri, and I remember the second game of Heupel's first season as offensive coordinator there, Missouri scored more than 60 points in a win over Eastern Michigan. And he thought, well, Missouri's offensive woes are solved here. They just hung 60 plus on Eastern Michigan. This is going to be rolling. And actually it took till the following season. They had some bright moments that initial year under Heupel, but it really took until the following season that Missouri's offense became one of the best in the SEC. But his offenses against these really poor group of five opponents, they really have a tendency to pile up the points. And I think that's one reason you see the spread so high. And John and I have talked about previously in this podcast, I think that's a reason too why there might not be a lot of hype around this Tennessee team now, even within the fan base. You don't hear a lot of people. I don't come across a lot of people thinking that this could be a big season for the Vols. However, let's see what the reaction is after this season opener. If Tennessee goes out there and hangs 60 plus on Bowling Green, we might be sensing a little more excitement from this fan base about the Josh Heupel era, and particularly what it could be capable of offensively.
Oh, this game is built for overreaction, I think, on the fan base's case. You know, Bowling Green gave up a ton of points last year. Heupel's offense is going to be, it's not going to be complete early on, but it's going to be able to move the ball. It's going to be fun to watch. And, you know, Bowling Green gave up points to its opponent in 96% of the red zone trips. So Tennessee is going to drive the ball. They're going to score a lot. And we're going to have this idea probably after this game. This is a scoring machine, but it's going to have a lot more to do, I think, with the opponent than it's going to have to do with the Vols.
I think one way a lot of fans will look at this, let's say Tennessee has a 40-point win, looks great offensively. I think a lot of fans will say, well, I know Bowling Green isn't really very good, but and then go on to explain how well everything works. But it's just really hard to put any stock in this kind of game, not just because it's Tennessee Bowling Green. Any kind of mismatch of this magnitude, it just doesn't mean a whole lot. We'll have to wait until week two with Pittsburgh, but we can hold back our judgment until then.
John, you have some historical perspective here. That's maybe putting it lightly. We like to joke that you've almost been around Tennessee football as long as General Nealon, but not quite. But you were around for that 2008 loss, right, against Wyoming. Tennessee lost 13-7 to Wyoming in that season that would ultimately produce change at the head of Tennessee football there, and Philip Fulmer stepped down at the end of that season. And of course, you were in the press box with me for that season opening loss, 38-30 to Georgia State in 2019. Which was the more inexplicable harder to fathom loss, that loss to Wyoming in an 08 or the 2019 loss to Georgia State? Or do you think there's one that even leapfrogs those two losses in terms of more inexplicable defeat that Tennessee's suffered during your time around the program?
Well, there were extenuating circumstances to that Wyoming loss in 08. Tennessee had already, Mike Hamilton, the AD, had made the decision to kick Philip Fulmer out of his office. He's been in a while as football coach. So there was a letdown from a lot of the players. Not that that team was functioning at even a mediocre level for parts of that season. But I think that was, the team was super flat. That was a really bad Wyoming team. I mean, there have been some pretty good Wyoming teams that Power Five conference teams wouldn't have wanted to play. But this team was second to last in the conference. And its coach was fired at the end of the year. Fired at the end of the year after being Tennessee in Neyland Stadium. That's how bad it was. And I just think from a talent standpoint, that was a worse team. The Georgia State game was, what was so odd to me about that game was Jeremy Pruitt, supposedly being a defensive guru, could not get his team to line up correctly. And they often lined up so out of position that Georgia State, probably once they went to the line, I think it was Daniel Ellington was a quarterback, would say, oh, there's a big gap on the right side. Why don't we cancel our other play and we'll just run over there and maybe even point it to that area of the field, and off they went. So that was pretty astounding as well. So both of those games were difficult to explain, but it was a little easier explaining the Wyoming loss because the longtime coach, had been fired.
Yeah, Jeremy Pruitt was, you know, building this reputation of being this defensive guru. And you're right, John, that 2019 opener, it's like Tennessee had never seen a read option before. I mean, Darrell Middleton was befuddled for four quarters as to what to do on a read option. My favorite, just I'll never forget this moment in that game, was when Tennessee had two guys lined up at defensive end at one end of the line within like 12 inches, 18 inches of each other, and there's no defensive end to be found on the other side of the line. You would have thought that one of those defensive ends would have looked at the other one and said, hey, maybe we don't both need to be occupying the same space. There's nobody on the other end of the line. But no, they just dug in and stayed right where they were and said, the heck with the other side of the line. We're going to have two defensive ends on this end. You seen anything like that in the defense alignment from what you've seen in a practice in Josh Heupel, Adam?
Well, I mean, let me go back on something on the 08 game, because I remember that game pretty well. I think the difference in the 08 game and the 2019 Georgia State game was sort of the fan reaction to it and what you were told by those games about the team. 08, that season was over. Fulmer was done. It was, you know, it was sort of the coroner, you know, coming and pronouncing the season dead. I think that more of what the 2019 game was, sort of a prognosis of a disease, you know, this is going to die. It's just going to die on down the line. And so I think that's why the reaction to the 2019 game was a little more daunting than the 08 game. 08, you see a loss to Wyoming, you can turn the TV off and say, this will get better with the next coach. With Pruitt, you realize this was going to be a slow death over time because it told you that things weren't going to get much better. The defensive line this year, there's some issues. I don't know if there's a pass rush there. I do think there's some chance for depth. I do think, Blake, in what you're talking about, I think this team will be lined up very well. One thing you've heard from all the players and the coaches both is that their number one goal in spring and in fall both was to make sure everybody had proper alignment. That's a very fundamental thing. They should know that, but they haven't in the past, and that's been a pretty good focus. They think they'll get lined up right and be in the right position. Now, whether or not they can make plays from that's a whole nother thing that we probably won't know until maybe the Pitt game, but certainly the Florida game in week four.
Yeah, Adam, John and I have talked so much about the quarterback competition on this podcast, and we both like also what Tennessee has at running back with Jabari Small and Tyon Evans. John is maybe nominating Tyon Evans for office. He's really been been leading the charge on Tyon Evans, but I know I've been right there behind John on that. But, you know, maybe, and we know Jalen Hyatt, Velus Jones, we know some of the commodities that Tennessee has off the top. But in your time around practice this preseason, who are maybe some guys that maybe aren't household names yet, who you think will quickly become that for Tennessee, either out of by necessity or just the fact that they seem poised for a really big season?
Cedric Tillman is one. I mean, I think that's a guy that's got some pretty decent size. I think one thing that's going to happen more with this receiving core is they're going to have more depth. They're going to have more options there. I think Josh Heupel's probably more equipped to use a wider range of wide receivers. You know, of guys that are maybe under the radar, you mentioned Jalen Hyatt, so I know he wouldn't necessarily be under the radar. That's a guy returning that was pretty productive as a freshman last year. But I think Jalen Hyatt specifically is a guy that's probably a second-tier guy that will move up into the top tier this year, mostly because of his position change. He was on the outside last year most of the time, ran a lot of go routes, a lot of deep routes. He's moved into the slot this year. One reason you usually move a guy from the outside to the slot is because of a weakness. You know, he's too slow, too undersized, can't get off press man coverage, so you move him to the inside where he's got more space at the slot. I think they've moved Jalen Hyatt inside because of his strengths. They like his speed. They think he can be an asset there. And, you know, in Heupel's offense, you have to have quick reads, a quick game, hot reads, and Jalen Hyatt is going to be a main target in that. So Cedric Tillman is a guy I think that's going to be productive. I think they're probably four or five deep at receiver at least. But Jalen Hyatt is a guy that I think if they had a 1,000-yard receiver this year, I think it would be him. I'm not so sure that they will, but I think he may get the closest because of the position they're moving him into in the slot.
It's around this time I usually ask if you like what you hear, go ahead and click subscribe on the Volunteer State if you haven't already. And we're now giving you another reason to subscribe, because if you get tired of John and I, well, now you can come and listen to Adam's insights as well. So if you don't subscribe to the Volunteer State already, really appreciate it so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, go ahead and click review. Those reviews help us get in front of more listeners. Despite what the scoreboard might say in this Bowling Green game, we shouldn't overreact based on the scoreboard. We've established that Tennessee could hang a bunch of points on Bowling Green in this opener, and that may not necessarily mean anything. However, is there something that you could see in this opener, good, bad, or otherwise, that could change you or could cause you to change your outlook on Tennessee's season based on what you see in this Bowling Green? Is there anything that could make you change your outlook?
Well, thinking big picture there, not so much individuals, but if you look at how well this offense functions, it's supposed to be a up-tempo offense. So it'll be interesting to see after a spring practice and a preseason just how well these guys have this thing down. If you see them, not many mistakes, not jumping off sides, jumping the snap count, everybody seemingly functioning at a high level, getting back and getting lined up. I know we're talking about it, very basic things here, but you want to see that from this kind of offense. You want to see precision, because your idea of your advantage is supposed to be your quickness. And that's not all foot speed. That's how quickly you get lined up. You have to know what you're doing and where you're going. So I think that's important. And another thing I would really be looking at, and I know where you're not going to be dealing with there's no Najee Harris, an Alabama reference, in the Bowling Green backfield. So you don't have to worry about somebody hurdling defenders. But how well does Tennessee tackle? In the first game, the tackling is usually not that sharp. But against an opponent of this ilk, you would think it would be better. And you'd like to see you hit guys, you wrap up, and they go down quickly, and they don't make a lot of forward progress. And also, something Tennessee had a lot of problems with in the past under Jeremy Pruitt was in the secondary. We mentioned before trouble about lining up. Well, there were just too many breakdowns in the secondary. even going back to last year, Jeremy Pruitt's third season, they just constantly, those things constantly hampered Tennessee's cause, inability to just be covering the right guy. And so that's something I think you could look for, and it wouldn't really matter who the opponent is.
And that's amazing too. When you think of Jeremy Pruitt's background, he came up through the ranks as a defensive backs coach. On the offensive side, Adam, I've been saying for a few weeks now that I think Joe Milton is the favorite to be Tennessee's starting quarterback. Of course, last we heard from Josh Heupel, he said he's not ready to announce a starting quarterback. And you asked him, well, does that mean you're just not ready to announce it? Or did the guys know internally? He said, no, I haven't named a quarterback internally as well. However, based on what you're seeing in practice, hearing from the offensive coaching staff, et cetera, am I off base in thinking that Joe Milton is going to be the starter? And beyond that, who do you think will be backing up the starter in the season opener?
Well, yeah, I think it's Milton. I think they know it's Milton. I think Joe Milton knows it's Joe Milton. Sometimes you'll see coaches do this to try to keep a competitive edge with a guy. You know, you haven't earned anything, as Josh Heupel said. So they want to have him have a little bit of an edge going into game week. But yeah, I think it's Milton. The number two, I mean, I think that's where more of the competition is. And I think there's a little bit of a motivation to keep that somewhat open between Hooker and Bailey, because now I don't think either of those guys are going to transfer. Hooker just came in. I don't think Bailey's going anywhere this late in August. But you do want to keep that competition live, because you could use two, because there's somewhat questions with the new system and who the starter is. You could easily use two. I think they'll use two quarterbacks in the opener. They'll probably use two quarterbacks at least in two of the first three games, because you're playing a Bowling Green at Tennessee Tech. So that number two quarterback can feel pretty confident that he's going to play and get his chance. I think you then have a question if, let's say, Joe Milton plays okay as the starter, and then the number two guy comes in. Let's say it's Hendon Hooker, who can run the ball pretty well. He comes in, looks dynamic. Does that suddenly put him back into the competition or give him a larger role, because you can see his potential more in the offense? I think it's Milton. I honestly don't know who the number two is. I think that may be somewhat situational. I don't think they know who that person is. You know, I'll be curious to see how long they stick with Milton, because if he's the starter, he's got to get a lot of reps. And you can be up 21 or 28 or 35 or whatever. I think if you're going to be ready for SEC play, you've got to keep your starter in there as long as possible. And so I think Josh Heupel will face a pretty big decision there if this is a blowout.
The danger of playing two quarterbacks, and I've written I'd be in favor of Tennessee maybe being using a two quarterback system for the first few weeks to really prolong the evaluation. Make sure you know what you got. I think Josh Heupel shouldn't have to answer for Jeremy Pruitt's shortcomings, but if we do use the past to try to inform us, Jeremy Pruitt committed to Jarrett Garantano too soon, and he stuck with him for too long. And so I think it would be refreshing to maybe to see a prolonged evaluation period here. Now, on the other hand, if you know you got a guy that's head and shoulders above the rest, if that's Milton, then so be it. You go with the one guy and move forward. And the danger, of course, always in a two-quarterback system is I don't know if this is, I guess it's a bad thing, is your backup quarterback goes out there and plays better than your starter, but you still think your starter is your better quarterback. And so as much as you want to have those blinders on and block out all the outside voices, you're going to hear a constant barrage of put in the backup. Why aren't we going to the backup quarterback? So yeah, that is the downfall there of going to your backup in a game like this, is your backup comes out there and dazzles and everybody's wondering, well, why the heck isn't that guy the starter?
Blake, I think another thing you have to wonder about, whoever the quarterback is, if in fact it seems to be Joe Milton, I would want to get him. I don't really care about how bad you're beating somebody. But what I wonder about with this schedule, the way Tennessee's schedule, it starts really easy. And I know we think Pittsburgh could be a toss-up kind of game, but Pittsburgh lost five defensive starters to the NFL. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to have a great defense. You know, Bowling Green doesn't have a mediocre defense either. And then Tennessee Tech, of course, will be outmanned. I'm wondering if whatever flaws the starting quarterback might have, let's say Joe Milton, if Tennessee will have no real idea of that until they go to Gainesville, which I don't think is an optimal situation. You'd like to know what a guy's strengths and weaknesses are, maybe, going into a game of that magnitude. And I just don't think Tennessee will.
All right, let's leave the conversation there for now. We'll pick it up again next week. We are about a week away from Tennessee's season opener. They will open up against Bowling Green on a Thursday night at Neyland Stadium. That's September 2nd. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.